This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And now to Russia's war against Ukraine. Since the start of the war back in February, 16 million people have fled Ukraine, according to the United Nations. Meanwhile, there have been over 6,000 confirmed civilian casualties, also according to the UN. We want to keep telling a personal story in the war that we have been following throughout. We first heard from Marina Teplova back in March as her family fled Ukraine. We spoke with her again in August. She's a doctoral student in English at Illinois State University in Bloomington Normal. She's originally from the east central Ukrainian city of Dnipro. Her daughter, Maria, whom she calls Masha, and her 3.5-year-old granddaughter, Aphrodite, left Ukraine early in the war for Poland and eventually for the Netherlands. When we last spoke, they were running into passport trouble. Marina joins us again to talk about how her family's doing and to get her thoughts on the latest developments in Ukraine. Marina Teplova, thanks for making the time to be with us again.
Hi, Brian. Hi.
So we'll come back a little bit later. I want to put a pause on the story of your daughter and granddaughter and how they're doing, but maybe just to set the stage, especially for people who might not have heard our past conversations. Can you remind us a little bit about your hometown and your experiences in Dnipro?
Of course, sure, absolutely. I'm from Dnipro, which is one of the biggest centers in central eastern part of Ukraine. And Dnipro borders Donetsk in the east, Kharkiv region in the north, and Zaporizhia region in the south. So it's sort of in the epicenter of nowadays, it's of refugee activity, because a lot of people from Kharkiv, Donetsk region, Zaporizhia occupied territories, when they can evacuate, a lot of people come to Dnipro. And my family is there. And so from what I've heard from my colleagues and friends, there are about 300,000 people who came to Dnipro just over the eight months of the war now, right? So Dnipro has become a hub for volunteer activity, despite the rocket attacks, of course. Like, Dnipro had, unfortunately, its share of destruction in this war. And nowadays, they're suffering from energy shortage, because, like, I'm talking to my mom, my mother, my sister, who has a job, who works for a local construction company. And from time to time, they tell me, like, yes, we had a blackout that lasted about 4 or 5 hours at a time. Sometimes some days are better, some not, but they are making supplies, and we also try to help them as much as we can. So they recently found some lamps that can be charged, you know. So this is a recent thing that many people in Dnipro buy, and in Ukraine, in Kiev as well. Because when you have blackout, it means that heaters don't work, you know, like the apartment goes cold. Thank God they have stoves, gas stoves, so they can, like, heat food. So that's the situation right now, yeah.
Yeah, Dnipro is not necessarily anymore being attacked itself, but the energy system is, and so people are without power. How does that affect daily life? You mentioned your sister and your mother are there, and last time we talked, you said life seemed fairly normal there for the most part.
Well, it seemed normal, but after that, there were a couple of horrible explosions in Dnipro. Yes, they dropped bombs on most cities. You know, like, Dnipro was not spared, unfortunately. I mean, Dnipro also had its share. It's just like it was not hit as hard as Kharkiv by comparison, right? But nevertheless, you know, how it affects everyday's life of people. Well, first of all, internet connection sometimes doesn't work as well, because internet routers, you know, Wi-Fi routers, which people use in apartments, they also depend on power, and not all power banks can provide, like, the charge for that. So I found a solution by calling my family directly, like by cell, because cell operators sometimes do better. And, you know, like, I want to thank T-Mobile company, because we became, like, connected to them, and they offered a special package for direct calls to Ukraine, you know, like, big discount, because honestly, like, when you call just like to someone sell in Ukraine, it's the charge is big. So that one more thing is, like, of course, most employers in Dnipro, for example, the employer for whom my sister works, they are all, like, strong patriots, you know, they support people, and they have Starlink connection in offices. So that helps. So my sister sounds like sometimes she can charge her phone at work, and that's how it helps. Yeah. And both my niece and nephew, my nephew, by the way, is 17. He's first year student. at university. My niece is Daria. She is, by the way, a very prolific athlete, and she does, I'm not sure like what it is called, like aerial silks, I think it is called. So she is very talented, and they both have to study at the light of these diode lamps, you know, that can be powered by the battery, because otherwise sometimes like it's difficult because blackouts happen right at the time when everyone is at home, for example, at 7 p.m., at 8 p.m., I mean, the productive time when people come home, like, you know, have dinner and have to do something to study. So that's the reality. But they're strong. And whenever I call them, they tell me that they're holding fast. You know, like they tell us, don't worry about us. We'll survive. We are good. We are okay. So that's their spirit. You know, the spirit is strong.
Yeah, living your evening life by lamplight, battery operated lamplight. Though, yeah. Last time we spoke, you mentioned also a cousin who was injured in combat and how his family had made it to Canada. How is he doing? How are they doing?
My cousin Evgeny, he's still with his unit. He's like recovering little by little, but he's waiting for the documents because it takes time, you know, like because he's been in hospital, he's had several examinations by medical commission, and hopefully he will soon be released and be allowed, you know, to join his family. But right now he's still in, I mean, I cannot say where he is exactly because it's like military details. I cannot speak about that. He's connected to his mother, my aunt. And when I call them, they tell me about news from him and his family. He has three kids, like two sons and a daughter. A daughter is a student at medical university in Dnipro, Margarita. She does her studies online, living in Canada by Ukrainian time, which is sometimes deep night in Canada, right? So she tries to maintain her course of studies, not to lose the years that she already did before they relocated to Canada. So, and of course his sons, one is Oleg, who is in high school now, and Ruslan, who is in middle school. They were both, I mean, all the whole family was wonderfully supported by the small, like little community, Stratford, as far as I remember, like a little town, not far from Toronto. But you know, the amazing thing is that people everywhere support them, and in local school they try to make it easier for them, which is of course it's challenging. You can imagine when people come to live in a different culture, speaking a different language, hearing it everywhere, and they were not like ready for that. I mean, let's be realistic, right? I mean, they learned some English, but not at the level that will allow them to like smoothly, you know, flow through the system and learn in this language together with native speakers in one classroom. That's the challenge. But nevertheless, you know, they all try to like, you know, to make their efforts because they have a wonderful sponsor. From what I've heard, he a Canadian businessman. He provided a whole estate, like a big house for this big family, and even like allow them some temporary jobs in summer. I know that boys worked in the restaurant on the golf course that this sponsor owns. So it's much better than the situation of many other refugees from Ukraine. So they were lucky that they found such strong support, really.
Yeah. And like you say, it is different though, coming to a different culture, a country that speaks a different language when you're, say, choosing to do it for graduate studies versus fleeing from a war and feeling like you have to get away.
Yes, absolutely. It makes crucial difference, you know, it's like, as it is for my daughter now, who is now here. Maybe like you wanted like to ask me about that. That might be the second. Like,
I do. I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a break in a couple minutes, so I don't want to get too deep in that story and then have to interrupt. So let me just ask, you know, we're 300 days since the start of this war, almost a whole year now. Did you expect when it started that we would still be talking about this, still be living through this now?
Well, of course not. You know, like honestly, like many Ukrainians, my friends, colleagues, my relatives, nobody thought that it would prolong so like protract, you know, like over the summer and into the autumn now. That's something we didn't think of even, you know, like honestly, everybody, of course, all Ukrainians want victory. You know, we wanted to come as fast as possible, as soon, you know, like sooner. Hopefully by the new year, or maybe like in spring, you know, like nowadays many people hope for spring. Unfortunately, we cannot affected. I mean, we cannot influence it a lot, but most Ukrainians do what they can do. They support, they volunteer, they collect donations, they send donations to the army, they organize some activities, you know, they participate in various events to try to promote the news about Ukraine. So that's also, I think all of those efforts, yes, like uniting Ukrainians all over the world, all of that, like small things sometimes, but when you have so much here, they all get together and create this huge wave of, I hope, like wave that will smash Russia and Putin and will help us win this war.
All right, that's a good place for us to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation with Marina Teplova, who is a doctoral student in English at Illinois State University, originally from Dnipro in East Central Ukraine. We're going to talk more about her daughter and granddaughter who live there, fled to Poland, then the Netherlands, and were trying to make their way to the United States, have finally done so. We'll hear how that happened after a break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking for the rest of our program today about Ukraine, and specifically a family story, a personal story we've been following since the start of the war. We're talking again with Marina Teplova, who is at Illinois State University in Bloomington Normal, but originally is from Dnipro in Ukraine. And so we've talked before about Maria or Masha, who is your daughter, and your 3.5-year-old granddaughter, Aphrodite. They had a harrowing train journey in the night across Ukraine, made their way into Poland, and eventually the Netherlands. You were able to visit them there. You've been working to get them to the United States, and I understand that that finally did happen. Can you just take us back to that moment, that day? How did reuniting with them feel for you?
Oh, yes, yeah, Brian, that's such a wonderful question because that happened on October 7th, the day when they finally came from Poland, from Warsaw by plane to Chicago airport. And of course, that event was preceded by so many efforts, so much communication with USCIS, trying to like to apply, then trying to solve the passport problem. And when finally all of that was behind, and we saw our little one running around like the airport and coming to us. And she was so full of energy, Aphrodite. She was totally all right. She was happy after having like this long flight. And before this flight, you know, the road was not just flying. They came from Dnipro with passports, right, to Poland, stayed one day there just to take a breath. And so they had to take two trains from Ukraine to Warsaw. And that's the reality. Like one train is to Przemyśl, little town in the border, and from Przemyśl to Warsaw, another train. And after that, they took the flight and came here. And that was like, I would say late in the evening, you know, usually flights from Warsaw come around 7 p.m. And of course, we came to meet them with my husband, Hort. And that was very emotional. For them, of course, it was full of excitement, but some sadness, of course, because, you know, it's, in many ways, when my daughter came here and looking at her reaction to everything, to the lifestyle here, to the culture, it's her first time in the US. And in many ways, I understand how she feels sometimes, the culture shock in some ways, you know, like some aspects are very difficult because, I mean, they are very different from life in Dnipro, which is a big city. I mean, sort of like Chicago with a lot of public transport solution, with taxis, with people like walking everywhere. And here you sometimes don't see anybody in the streets. Everybody drives cars and there is almost no public transport. So that's sometimes shocking for people who come from Europe, you know, some it's a bit difficult to like accept right away. So that takes time.
Yeah, Bloomington Normal is not, you know, it has many virtues, but it is not a cosmopolitan European major city. How has that culture shock affected them? How are they adapting?
Well, yeah, you know, like, of course, it hasn't been like always smooth because, like, basically, I'm speaking about mental health because from time to time, my daughter, yes, she is, unfortunately, yes, she's prone to some bouts of depression, wanting to come back to Dnipro, like, to her life back in Ukraine, even though that's dangerous, yes, but That's one of the common feature that unites so many refugees, because we have other relatives who live in other countries. All of them have this feeling, you know, sometimes like strongly needing to come back. But despite all of that, there are things that happen here. There are local efforts to support them and government efforts. For example, Illinois, I would mention, first of all, yes, like, you know, Illinois Department of Human Services, they are doing amazing job, you know, like to support Ukrainian refugees. And, you know, we are so happy because they supported us. We had to apply for benefit programs, of course, for Maria and for Afrodita. And they received benefits. They started receiving cash assistance and SNAP benefits, which is great because, you know, it's how important it is to feel that you are supported, right? Not totally dependent on relatives. Of course, we support them as well, but, you know, like it means a lot. To receive some financial funding, yes, from the government. And then people, of course, who work in that office, I would also like want to thank all of them. And Ms. Buchanan, who is like who works at Family Resource Center in Bloomington. So these people, yes, they helped us a lot. And of course, we received medical insurance for them. So, you know, there were a lot of, I would say, paperwork, yes, and some official things that have to be done. But, you know, we are doing well and we have had a lot of interesting meetings over these, I would say, 2 months, right, that they have been here. So much has happened that it's even difficult to keep track of what exactly we've had, what meetings, who we met, or who we talked to. And we tried to, you know, provide some, in October especially, we tried to take them to different places to show them some cultural events, especially preceding Halloween. And we took them to Raider family farms. And some like local places, mostly farms where people had a lot of entertainment for kids, because our little one is not in preschool yet, and that's the main one of the key obstacles right now, like that we want to overcome, because we've already solved so many th other things here, but preschool for the child is not easy because we had to go to the doctor for that to give some tests, and yeah, that takes time. But I think that we will solve all of that, and she'll maybe hopefully in January she will start going to some preschool, probably one of the public schools, either in Bloomington, Lexington, we'll decide where. And that will help her, you know, like socialize, because a little child, even like 3.5 year old, they also need socialization, right? They need to be around their peers, even if she speaks like a different language, but still. You know, like she needs to be around kids her age, so that's our next goal here. And we also had a wonderful meeting with, so, you know, some events here were connected to my university community, which has been so helpful, so supportive. And for example, in October, in November, yes, November 15, we had a panel due to Professor Ella Przybyło at English department. So she invited a Polish scholar, Anna Topolska, who gave a lecture at University Galleries on ethics and aesthetics of war photography. And I was invited as one of the like members, like, sort of participating, sort of like facilitator and asking questions to Anna. And after that, we all went to the restaurant with Maria and Fredita. And it was wonderful because both Ella and Anna are from Poland. And you know, when they talk to Maria, you know, like, and she's been to Poland as well, she spent some time in Warsaw. It was so wonderful to feel so much communion and understanding, you know, and empathy, because Polish people are a big part of our family, because they were the first who embraced Ukrainians in Poland and provided, you know, like a lot of resources for them. So that was so warm and so supportive. Well, and of course, maybe one more interesting meeting that I would mention that helped my daughter, you know, feel like belonging, you know, and finding friends here is we met this amazing family of Americans who supported other Ukrainians who live in Bloomington, because there are two families who came to Bloomington like in April on a different program. They came through Mexican border back in April, but still they're also here, and we met with them. And that was one of the highlights of their stay, my daughter's stay here. We met on the territory of American sponsors, and there was like a big gathering of two, like my daughter, my granddaughter, me and my husband, and Ukrainian family with two kids, and American family. So that was so like, you know, so warm and so, I would say, so welcoming. And we spoke several languages. We spoke like Ukrainian, we spoke English. We had to translate sometimes, some Russian, unfortunately, yeah, because many Ukrainians speak Russian. And as much as we try to avoid speaking it, but still sometimes we resort to it. Yeah. And so that was very interesting. And because this American family has a son-in-law who also speaks Russian, who came from many years ago from one of Soviet Union republics here. And that was one more interesting feature that added, to all this like exhilaration of people sharing cultural backgrounds and discussing things that they share. And this Ukrainian family, of course, they are from Kyiv, from one of the little towns not far from Kyiv. So there was a lot of things to share, and my daughter finally felt that yes, she's not alone. There are other people here like her, who also had to flee, who had to change everything drastically, completely, like to turn their life, like 360, yeah, in totally different direction, like 180. What is the
180,
better way
right.
to describe it? Yeah.
So let me in the 5 minutes or so we have remaining, I want to go bigger picture in our conversation, because international support is not quite for Ukraine, is not quite what it was back in March. And even here in America, there was a poll last week that showed basically people are split down the middle. A bit less than half said the U.S. should support Ukraine for as long as it takes. A similar percentage said the U.S. should urge Ukraine to settle, whatever that means. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I understand that. Yes, there is this factor, which the psychological, yes, effect of being sort of fatigued from the war, right? And not just fatigue on the battlefield, but fatigue in the minds of people, right? And yeah, it's true, like it does happen. But I would still say that Ukraine feels strong support from many most international countries, like from most international community, for example, G7 countries and European Union countries. Leaders of Germany, of most European big states, they all say that Ukraine has to decide when to settle. Like it's Ukrainian right, to decide when to go to negotiations and whether to go to them with Russia. And that is something I strongly support. I really respect that the way they frame it, because it's important for other international powers to state it. Yes, that Ukrainians are in such a difficult situation now, right? Fighting this enemy who is relentless, who is constantly sending new troops, even though they are completely inexperienced. They did this mobilization wave, but they do bomb our cities. Yeah, they attack our infrastructure. They want us to leave the country without heat, without electricity, without water. So this enemy is strong, unfortunately. Yes, and Ukrainians are also strong. Ukrainians are fighting, but they need support. And that support comes in the form of ammunition, in the form of, by the way, infrastructure for power stations and hydropower stations. From what I know, like some European countries already promised to provide Ukraine with generators, because otherwise it's difficult to maintain electrical supply of power to hospitals, yes, to critical infrastructure, which supports life in Ukrainian cities. So I'm
Yeah.
still positive, and I still think that this support will continue, and Ukrainians, and it's like, it continues also, I think, because of the victories that Ukrainians show, strength that they show on the battlefield, right? So this amazing ability of courage and ability to survive and to succeed with whatever they have. And they have sometimes like the numbers are completely different. Yes, the numbers are not to Ukrainian favor. But look at what Ukrainian soldiers are doing with those numbers, yes, and with the help that they receive from USA, from Germany, from Italy, from Netherlands. They receive like various types of munitions, I'm not sure like of all the names of the munitions that they receive, but some of those weapons are powerful and they are able to reach over like 200 and 300 kilometers. So they try to use them to the best. So I hope for the continuing support of international community, support for Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us again, not just today, but throughout this year, about what you and your family have been experiencing. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Yeah, and thank you so much. Thank you, Brian.
Marina Teplova is a doctoral student in English at Illinois State University. We've got links to our past conversations with her, and they are interesting and worth listening to as well, especially about the harrowing night train out of Dnipro that her daughter and granddaughter took back in the early days of the war. You can find those on our website, 21stshow.org. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about the rising strength and numbers of the Asian American Caucus in the Illinois General Assembly with State Representative Teresa Ma, who's the leader of that caucus, and also State Representative-elect Sharon Chung, who is the first Korean American elected to the Illinois General Assembly and the first Asian American elected from downstate Illinois. She's from the Bloomington-Normal area. That conversation will be tomorrow on the 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Anaya Jones, and Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering for our program comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Once again, I want to suggest you visit our website, 21stshow.org. You can find all the ways to contact us. Let us know what you thought about today's program. Our email, voicemail, Twitter, all the ways are there at our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our podcast or just search for The 21st on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.